This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. David Hockney is the quintessential L.A. painter. He made his name painting portraits and outdoor scenes, placing his subjects near the patios and swimming pools outside their cool, glammy, modernist L.A. houses. He uses vivid, delicious colors and captured the shockingly clear desert light. But Hockney is a native of a very different kind of place. And 5 years ago, when he was 67, he returned to northern England, to the countryside where he grew up. He's living now in a village called Bridlington on the coast of the North Sea. And the landscape he's painting now is pretty much the opposite of L.A. Green fields, thick woods, old fences, gray skies. You can see some of those landscapes at studio360.org. David Hockney's now having his first exhibition of new paintings in New York since the 20th century. And when I met up with him at his gallery, he'd just come from a quick smoke on the sidewalk.
I went to the Museum of Modern Art the other day and I noticed they have a splendid photograph of Monet in his studio with a cigarette in his mouth.
There you go.
Yeah, about 86.
gives you courage?
Pardon?
It encourages you?
Well, I'm a happy smoker.
I know you are. I know you are. So is he.
Fed up of the prigs, actually. Yeah. Too much. It's gone too far. Yeah. Much too far. Yeah.
Hockney's largest painting in this new show, and it is gigantic, is called Winter Timber. But it's not like any English forest you've ever seen.
These bright blue trees and purple road and orange and green and brown logs. You're known for bright colors, but this sort of raises it to a psychedelic Van Gogh level, you know?
The thing is with color, of course, the larger the area, in a way, the more intense the color. I mean, it's like, what's Matisse's famous thing? 2 kilos of blue is bluer than 1 kilo of blue. Very good, very, very good. So I knew you could, if you start using color on a very big scale, it can be very powerful, very effective. And I'd found how to do something on a very big scale. I'd found a theme, the trees being chopped down, I thought was very interesting indeed, the verticals, horizontals.
Well, there's another aspect to these paintings. When one has seen for these last decades David Hockney paintings of Los Angeles, you go, oh, that makes sense that Los Angeles is being depicted in these kinds of bright colors. But one doesn't think of the North England countryside being depicted.
Well, there's a lot more color there than
one
you think. I mean, photography can't get it, really. For instance, if it rains, the barks of trees go quite dark, even a lovely black. Well, in the spring, with a very fresh green, the black and the green are very, very lovely. And if you're in one place, you're noticing this all the time. Remember, the excitement for me was in California. You don't get the vast changes of season. Suddenly, in northern Europe, it's quite dramatic, the change from winter to the spring. And I hadn't seen it for 25 years, 30 years. So suddenly...
You were seeing freshly.
Suddenly, I'm seeing it freshly, and I thought, my God, it's very, very exciting watching it as well. And, you know, if you just... Your job is just to observe it. It's very exciting. So, you know, quite a little town, Bridlington. Most people would think it was very boring, but we don't. I mean, because we can see something that's very exciting.
And... Well, and also, in the way the trees have been cut down and are lying here, there's something very old-fashioned, pre-modern about it, to me.
About the picture?
About the picture, because yeah. One doesn't... I mean, this, as I say, this is something that one could have seen in 1850 or 1920.
Well, you'll be able to see it in another 100 years as well.
Maybe you will.
It won't go away. I mean, I am painting the visible world. I mean, I'm... No, not all artists do. I mean, I happen to be an artist interested in depiction. I figured out ways to do quite big things outside. I mean, these were painted sur le motif, as it were. Well, in the 19th century, they couldn't do that.
Right.
You know, when Monet was painting his Déjeuner sur l'herbe, which is quite a big painting, tall, he had to dig a hole in the earth so he could, as it were, lower the painting so he could paint the top. Because you can't really paint that freely up a ladder. But because we photographed each canvas, I could see the rest of it on a computer. And that's how one did it. Quite a bit of high-tech involved, but you don't see the high-tech.
Right.
You don't see it. You don't have to see it.
Although once you think about it, and how on earth did he make such large paintings?
Most artists are very practical people.
And you're happy to use the whatever technological means are available to...
I mean, you do. We do, don't we? All artists do, really. You know, you wouldn't have had Impressionism without the invention of the collapsible tube, painting tube, which is about 1840, 50.
Yeah.
And that made it possible then to take paints outside, which, you know, was rather difficult for a constable. He had still those bladders and things.
These paintings remind me of how much more cheerful and optimistic you seem than other great painters of our time. Certainly other great, you know, Lucian Freud or Francis Bacon, one looks at their paintings and goes, oh, God. Whereas one looks at your work...
Actually, a friend in France who showed my work to kids in a school, and he said children reacted quite strongly to them, and he said... He said, I understand why, David. You've got an odd combination here, observation and joy. I think the process of looking is a joyful thing, actually. It is. You can always see that. I mean, we live in a bit of a downer age at the moment. It's too negative, isn't it?
Although in many ages they've thought that.
but a lot of things just seem a bit of a downer now. And frankly, I don't go along with it.
And you've started painting... I use in quotation marks, on your iPhone in the last year or two?
Yeah, this year I think it was. I figured it out. I mean, what is it? Brushes? It's an app.
It's an application,
brushes,
yeah.
It took me a while to figure it out, but...
You use your finger to do it. Right?
I use my thumb, actually. Your first instinct is to use your finger, but if you use your finger, then the fulcrum is your elbow,
right.
So...
No, the thumb has much more pivotal...
thumb, because it's small, the fulcrum is on your thumb, so I can... I mean, it took me a while, but I got...
You've done hundreds, right?
I've done a few hundred, yeah. Well, from May till August, the rising sun would hit me in the face in my bed, meaning I saw it. I started actually drawing them on the iPhone, because the iPhone is a luminous screen. And suddenly a luminous subject was the rising sun, which I realized I wouldn't have drawn with a pencil, but with a luminous screen, it becomes rather good. And I'd watch it carefully, and you can only watch it for, you know, 3 minutes, about. Terrific subject. After all, it's the source of everything, isn't it? But
so do you regard it as a sort of sketch pad, essentially?
Yeah. It's always in your pocket. You've got a whole range of marks. You've got a whole range of colours.
You don't need 10 crayons or
chalk. I mean, it's all just in your pocket. Yeah. Or it was all just by the bed, you see.
Yeah.
And I just sent them out to friends, about 25 friends. They all liked it. They said, yes, we like getting them from you, David, because when we see it's an email from you... We know we don't have to reply. It's not a request for anything. It's just pure pleasure when you open it.
If you were 40 or 50 years younger than you are now today, if you were 22, 32, do you have any sense of what kind of work you'd be doing?
I don't know, but I think it's quite an exciting time for pictures. I was invited to Adobe in Silicon Valley when they launched Photoshop. They invited me because they'd seen that Pear Blossom Highway photo piece I'd done.
Which was a collage of...
big collage. It's photographs. In the Getty now. But I went up and I was fascinated and I immediately saw, well, this is drawing, that's what you're doing, and it's the end of chemical photography. And that was 1989... It lasted a bit longer, but I could see the end was in sight. I could see that was happening. suddenly there were new kinds of photography as well, actually, meaning you could take 800 pictures of one thing, which you couldn't do with the chemicals because of the... Every 36, you'd have to change a film, you'd have to process everything. Very cumbersome, so nobody did that. I realised with the digital cameras there was a new form there, and my assistant in Brid, when I was painting all these, he then photographs me doing it. But I then realised there was a new form of storytelling, and you'd need a good story, and what better story than seeing a picture being made by hand?
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, sir, very much.
Okay, thank you.
David Hockney's new paintings are on view now at the Pace Wildenstein Galleries in New York City until Christmas. You can see a video of some of my interview with David Hockney at his gallery on our website, studio360.org. There is probably no painter more famous in the world right now than David Hockney. And coming up, one of David Hockney's biggest, undoubtedly most obsessive fans spends 8 years on a single portrait, hoping to impress his idol.
I think when Billy unveils Marilyn Monroe, I think David Hockney, after he picks his jaw up off the floor, is going to turn to Billy and say, "You're showing me this great piece. What do you want?"
That's ahead in a minute in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC. Stay with us.